Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real. Before I get to the relevant data of this past week and talk about the interest rate issues facing the market and the economy, I want to talk about the election and the Fed's decision tomorrow. Yes, the Fed makes its decision at its November meeting, which is the 7th. The Fed is most likely going to cut rates by 25 basis points on Thursday. Not because of anything else, but to try once again to push T-bill rates lower in order to lower debt service payments for his buddy Janet Yellen and the Treasury. Now, Yellen can't afford to pay over $1 trillion of annual interest payments on our skyrocketing $36 trillion debt. Powell is trying to lower that amount, but as I stated last week, the bond market vigilantes are saying, if your central bank no longer cares about inflation, then we must care a whole lot more about it ourselves. Now, regarding the election, I was pleasantly surprised by Trump's victory because the odds were stacked too high against him for an immediate victory last night. I had at least believed that the election would take days to find a resolution, and there was a high probability of a contested result leading to civil unrest. I was wrong, and the portfolio was offsides at the start of today. That has been fixed, and quickly. But can you really blame me? Trump had to battle the completely corrupt media, woman who viscerally, not all women, but I think most women viscerally would prefer to be part of electing the first female president, minorities who typically skew towards Democrats, and the youth vote, which does the same. But Trump won because inflation has destroyed the middle class. And no matter how much the liberals tell us that inflation is under control and how much better off they are under Biden and Harris, people know their own situation and they know that their purchasing power has been destroyed and they voted for change. Trump greatly benefited also from the weaponization of the Justice Department, which scared many Americans who cling preciously to the rule of law that this country was built on. Yes, it was the liberals that were going down the road of anarchy and a dictatorship by trying to arrest the former president for writing a check in a non-disclosure agreement and, you know, making him suffer many felonies for doing that one act. The bottom line is that Trump is going to be much better for the economy and markets than Harris. Tax cuts and deregulation is fundamental for growth. However, he is not a true libertarian. He espouses for a weak dollar and loves negative real interest rates. He even fought for negative nominal rates during his first tenure. And his love affair for cryptocurrencies is bizarre on two fronts. On Trump's side, I find it baffling why he chooses cryptos over gold. Tying the increase of dollars to the mine supply of gold would be ideal to prevent asset bubbles and to save the middle class. There are a virtual unlimited number of blockchains and cryptocurrencies that can be created. On the crypto end of the spectrum, I cannot understand how an asset that ostensibly holds its value by promoting its anonymity and decentralization features can really benefit from having the blessing of government intervention. If it is truly decentralized and anonymous, then who cares what government or Wall Street thinks about Bitcoin? They can only supply spurious demand that distorts prices, which, by the way, can be taken away by the next administration and cause those very same prices to crash. Most importantly, the remarkable Trump sweep changes the growth and inflation dynamic for the immediate future. More on how this changes our portfolio in a bit. However, economic growth remains unremarkable for the time being. Total non-farm payroll employment was essentially unchanged in October, up 12,000 employees. and the unemployment rate was unchanged at 4.1%. This was the lowest jobs print since December of 2020. Of course, the report was negatively affected by two hurricanes and the Boeing strike. I get that. However, what I find most interesting is the revisions for the prior 2 months. The change in total non-farm payroll employment for August was revised down by 81,000 people, from up 159,000 to 78,000. And the change for September was revised down by 31,000, from 254,000 to 223,000. With these revisions, employment in August and September combined is 112,000 jobs less than what was previously reported. I mean, they missed August number by over 50%. And the Fed is making decisions on this faulty data? In the household survey, there were 368,000 less people reporting holding jobs, and the labor force contracted by 220,000. And as bad as this report was, storms included, the government found it possible to hire another 40,000 workers in October. That makes 381,000 government workers hired so far this year, with 2 months left to go. The government is on pace to hire 460,000 people this year. That is in addition to the 709,000 government jobs created last year. For comparison's sake, in the pre-pandemic year of 2019, there were just 218,000 government jobs added, not 709,000. And for those who still want to claim that the labor economy is robust, since February of 2024, the year-over-year change in full-time employment has been negative. Full-time jobs are diminishing, and those formerly gainful employed workers have become part-time Uber drivers and part-time realtors, making an inconsistent and small fraction of what they used to make for as a living. As a matter of fact, my friend David Stockman points out back in March of 2008, there were 21.819 million goods-producing jobs in the United States, but there were just 21.821 million jobs for the same goods-producing industry as of October 2024. That's 2,000 jobs gained in the last 199 months in the all-important manufacturing, construction, and mining industries combined. The growth rate has averaged 10 goods producing jobs per month. Now, the goods producing sector contains some of the most important and high paying jobs around and is mandatory to support our middle class and to ensure a healthy balance of trade. But you could forget about that. To this point, economic activity in the manufacturing sector contracted in October for the 7th consecutive month and the 23rd time in the last 24 readings. This according to the ISM Manufacturing Index. It was the lowest ISM manufacturing reading this year. Manufacturing employment was 44.4 on the index versus 45 expected. And new orders came in at 47.1 versus 47 expected. And prices paid actually jumped to 54.8 from 50. The manufacturing recession continues, but with high and rising inflation. Now, of course, regardless of what the Fed wants, the 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is pegged towards the benchmark 10-year Treasury, and that has surged to 7.1%, over 7.1%, up from 6.1% on September the 18th, the day the Fed thought it was necessary to lower borrowing costs to keep the rate of inflation from falling below 2%. And we know that that backfired. Now, the overnight reverse repurchase agreement facility is now down to $155 billion. This means the roughly $2.3 trillion in excess reserves that had been parked at the Federal Reserve have already left the central bank and been used to purchase Treasury debt. In other words, the reservoir of funds that have been used to purchase bonds is now empty, and the liquidity in the bond market is evaporating, if not almost completely dry now. By the way, if you listen to the buy and hold 60/40 stock and bond portfolio advice held by nearly all of Wall Street over the past 5 years, you are now down well over 50%. Yes, you've lost half of your money in your allocation to long-term USA risk-free treasury bonds in your portfolio. Now, investors are paying 25, or now it's even higher, over 26 times S&P 500 trailing 12-month earnings. That is the richest valuation since 2000 and 50% above the historical median. Bond yields are spiking and the economy is just doing okay and caution is still prudent. But elections matter. So what does this mean for our inflation, deflation, and economic cycle portfolio? Trump's victory over the White House, the Senate, and most likely the House of Representatives does delay the inevitable and inexorable grand reconciliation of asset prices. In addition, real interest rates should be higher than they were pre-election in the context of an acceleration in GDP growth. That is bad for the precious metals complex, of which we've been long of for a very, very long time, particularly gold. Gold, silver, platinum hate, abhor, and despise rising real and rising nominal interest rates. And those rates are soaring despite what Jerome Powell deeply desires to have happen. The Fed cut rates by 50 basis points in September, and as I predicted, they will most likely cut another 25 basis points tomorrow. But that should just send long-term rates even higher. Interest rates are rising due to inflation, insolvency, and illiquidity concerns. That is not good news for long-duration bonds, and it's not good news for precious metals, and it's not good news for bond proxies. The Trump presidency 2.0 does little in the way of solving any of these long-term concerns. It solves short-term concerns, not long-term concerns. Debt and deficits should only still increase. The nation is still insolvent. And the king of debt, Donald Trump, the king of debt and the king of a weak dollar is not an inflation slayer. In fact, if we're going to be honest, as much as I voted for, as much as I prefer Trump over Harris, it was the Treasury and Feds under Donald Trump. It was their helicopter money response to COVID in 2020 that laid the foundation for soaring inflation in 2021 through 2022. And that ended up sinking Harris's candidacy. Of course, Biden just exacerbated the whole inflation problem that was in the pipeline with a ridiculous and unwarranted second round of helicopter money when COVID was on the wane. Stronger economic growth has a high probability to delay the recession for a bit longer, along with the consequences of rising debt service for the time being. The play here is to get longer of sector four, which is reflation and growth, until those rising rates tighten financial conditions and cause credit spreads to widen. That has not changed. They still have an overvalued stock market. It's in a massive bubble, along with real estate, and spiking bond yields could derail the whole thing. Now, right now, that's not the case. And my model monitors those functions extremely closely. As always, I remain vigilant on both those fronts. My sole motivation is to, with the help of God, place investors' funds in whatever asset class offers the best return potential given the macroeconomic backdrop and risk profiles. That will never change.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of The Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you're not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.